Hi there, and welcome back to the Hugo's There podcast. I'm your host, Seth Heasley, and I'm reading the Hugo winners one guest at a time. My guest for this episode is James Ralston, one of my Take Me to Your Reader co-hosts, and we are going to be discussing Forever Peace by Joe Haldeman, which won the 1998 Hugo Award for Best Novel. So, hey, James.
Hello.
Thanks for coming over to my house.
Huh? Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, had to try out the new podcast studio, see if the soundproofing works at all.
Right. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
It's not really your first time on the podcast. You've been in the feed before.
Oh, yeah. Touché.
Because we did Conjure Wife.
Bonus reels.
Yeah, exactly. Right off the top, James, I have to know, are we going to be able to get through this podcast without using the word jacking? or if we do use it, is it just going to end up with peals of dumb laughter from both of us?
Most likely.
Yes. So, I mean, we talked a little about your nerdy history on the Conjure Wife episode, but if people haven't listened to that, what do people need to know about you?
Ah, how nerdy am I, huh?
Yeah.
Long-time nerd, I suppose. I don't know. Grew up playing video games, putting computers together, reading dorky sci-fi books. I used to read a lot of those, like, you know, just dime novels that I would pick up at convenience stores.
Oh, nice.
Sci-fi books.
Oh, almost like pulp stuff, huh?
Right.
Yeah.
Yep. Cool. And then I got into, you know, things like Crichton and stuff like that for road trips. And, yeah, watched all the movies. Grew up watching, you know, Star Wars, Star Trek, Babylon 5.
Sweet.
X-Men, Spider-Man.
And then you worked in the technology sector on a submarine,
right? Yep, pretty much. Navy nuke, yeah. And then, so, you know. There's my engineering experience. Hella nerds there, too.
Big time, yeah. I'm sure.
And then I got a nerdy degree, and then now work for Intel.
Yeah, you had the misfortune to connect with me, right?
Yep.
I was walking around the other day at work, and I ran into somebody else that I interviewed way back in the day.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. It used to happen all the time when you and I were walking around.
Yeah, that's true.
You'd be like, do you know everybody here?
How do you know
here?
All these people?
Like, that's what happens when you've
you
been here.
You and Jay. For, Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah. When you've been here for 25 years. So. Anyhow, I will say one fun thing about this is, and I've mentioned it on other podcasts even before, is that despite having done this for, I don't even know how many years it is now.
Right.
It's like
the Hugo's
six
podcast?
Years, something like that.
The Hugo's or Take Me to Your Reader?
Hugo's.
Uh-huh.
Hugo's, right. Yeah. This is only the second decade that I'm crossing off. So I've got the 70s and the 90s crossed off now. And I'm one away in like the 60s and the 80s. So,
so close.
Yeah. So but it's fun to close down a decade.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So
I'm happy to help.
Yeah, absolutely. And on that note, why'd you choose this book, James?
Well, I chose this book because Forever War was already taken.
Right.
I wanted to do Forever War, and then it was taken. I'm like, God dang it, fine.
Yeah. I mean, part of it is that I know you well enough to know that you enjoy some military science fiction.
I probably would have done any military science fiction. And then all the ones that I had done previously are taken. So I'm like, okay, I'll do Forever Peace. Because I'd already previously read Forever War.
Right.
And then when I signed up to do Forever Peace, I was like, okay, well, I'll go back and read Forever War, which turns out to be completely unnecessary.
Yes.
They're in no way related.
Yeah.
And so I read the preface, right, for Forever Peace. Mm-hmm. And it does say this is not a sequel, it's something different or whatever.
Yeah.
But I still kind of expected to be in links like in the same comic universe.
Right. Yeah.
But not at all. I'm like, I kept waiting for something related to Forever War to happen. I guess not a sequel. I get it.
Yeah.
But the universal.
Yeah.
I'm like, something, but then they never did.
There was one time when the name Mandela came up, because that's the main character's name in the Forever War.
Right.
But it was a place name. So I thought, I wonder if that's, you know, just related. But
I thought they were talking about something like South Africa related with Nelson Mandela.
Yeah, I don't know. It's the Mandela effect.
Yeah.
I forgot to ask you about how many Hugo winners you've read. Cause I was talking about the decades and stuff, you know, here I'm at now 70, not 70 episodes, but 70 of them that I've read.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's one left on the list that I had previously read before starting the podcast.
Right.
So,
okay. So how many have I read? Well, okay. So to finish up why I chose this book.
Okay.
Because like you said, I like anything military science fiction.
Yeah.
And I had to find out sorely that Old Man's War was not Hugo winner.
Yeah.
Like, oh, man. Okay, fine. So Forever War and Star Trek Jupiter is already taken. I guess I didn't answer that question. All right. My list of Hugo. So first of all, I was surprised to see that The Sword in the Stone was on that list.
Yes.
I'm like, really? Like the Disney movie Sword in the Stone?
Yeah.
So does watching the Disney movie count?
No, it does not.
I don't think I've actually read the book, but I remember watching the movie like, when I was a kid.
Yeah, it's the first part of the Once and Future King.
Right.
And it's a retro winner. So. Right.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, funny. Yeah. So I have 10 on my list, 5 of which we've done on Take Me to Your Reader.
Okay. Now you quiz me here, see if I can get it. That's Dune, Starship Troopers, Conjure Wife. We haven't done Ender's Game.
Nope. Time's up.
Oh, Fahrenheit 451. We haven't done The Man in the High Castle.
Nope. Fahrenheit 451. And we did it with Phil. Rendezvous with Rama.
That's right. I forgot. Does that one count as an episode on Take Me to Your... I guess it does. But
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
It does. It does. It's just not as...
I mean, it's on the list.
It wasn't a typical one because there's no adaptation yet, right?
Yeah. So that was the 5 that I did, that we read because of Take Me to Your Reader. And then the 5 that I read on my own were The Forever War, Ender's Game, Speaker for the Dead, Forever Peace, and Red Shirts.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Which I forgot Red Shirts was there too. I'm like, oh, yes. Awesome.
Yeah. It's funny because Starship Troopers held in for a long time. Nobody took it for a really long time.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, I only did it like in 2020, I think. Oh, okay. So, yeah.
So anyway, I was a little surprised once I counted how many I'd done. And then I was also, the flip side, I was like, oh, how many have we done from Take Me to Your Reader? So
right.
I didn't realize we had covered those 5 at least.
Mm-hmm.
So
this is a first time read for you, first time read for me.
For Forever Peace, yeah.
So can you, I'm curious how you would approach this, doing like a non-spoiler synopsis of this one. We've already revealed that this is not a sequel to The Forever War in any way.
Right.
If you want a sequel to The Forever War, there's a direct sequel to it called Forever Free. I don't think it's very good. I listened to the audiobook a couple weeks ago and thought, this was not necessary. But if you really want to know what happens to Mandela and Mary Gay after that book, then you can check it out. And to all of humanity. Because in that one, remember that the humanity had been replaced by man, you know, it was like this unified intelligence and stuff. Yeah.
Just a human.
Yes.
Yeah.
What was the, in Community, the mascot?
Oh, right. The human being.
Human being. Yeah. That's right. Yes. that's what I picture.
Yeah. And a green suit. So you can be whatever you want him to be.
Yeah.
So non-spoiler synopsis, huh?
Yeah.
Hmm. Well, so it's in the future. I forgot kind of how far into the future this is.
It's like 2040 something, I think.
Something like that, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because at some point somebody gets their memory altered and they think it's 2004.
Right. Let's see. So it's far enough in the future where humankind has something called a nanoforge. Which all it requires is base elements to create something for you.
Right.
It's kind of like Replicator in Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
Only bigger and better.
It's not turning energy into things. It's turning different matter into things.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Although it's using energy to do it. So.
Still uses energy. Yeah. I'm sure. Yeah. It's got it. I don't know how exactly it works. Cause if I did, I'd be like a gazillionaire.
Right.
And so they have those things, but only certain countries have them.
Right.
Which creates haves and have nots, and they go to war.
Yeah.
Basically. And again, being sufficiently advanced, the nations who have them have advanced technology. So we have these things called soldier boys, and also air boys and
fly boys. Yeah, fly boys and water boys.
Water boys. That's what it was. Yeah. So it's like Iron Man 2, Army, Navy, and Air Force.
Right. Yeah. Pretty much.
Yeah. It's almost like World War something, right? I think every country is at war in one.
Yeah, though when you think about it from the perspective of the Alliance, right, they pretty much think of the Ngumi as insurgents, more or less.
Right.
But they're and they're kind of splintered into cells and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, the soldier boys are like drones, mechs, right?
Yep, basically mechs.
Yeah.
That's what they totally reminded me of. I'm like, gosh, I could play Mech Warrior.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah, but they're remote control, right? So the Alliance folks don't even really have that much skin in the game.
No, all the quote unquote soldiers are jacked.
Right. Yes.
Jacked in like a command center, fully protected, armed and all that stuff. So there's no way they'd be physically hurt.
Right. Psychologically,
I was gonna say mentally. So mentally hurt.
Yeah.
So if their soldier boy gets shot up, they kind of like, they feel it in their head, and it could be, depending on what they do, it could be a psychological distressor.
If you die in the Matrix, you die here.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Can't
really go much further, I don't think.
No, you can't, because although I think it's fair to say that that's not all the book's about.
No.
In fact, it kind of takes a turn.
Right.
That's just the premise.
And that's what kind of got me, I think, because of the multiple plot lines going on, it was a little slow for me for the first, like, third, probably.
Yeah.
I'm like, yay, Soldier Boy is cool. This is a great idea.
Yeah.
And then you go to the cafe and the Seven.
Right.
Is it Seven? Yeah, Seven. And they're like having these conversations. I'm like, come on, let's go. Come on, stop with the drama.
Yeah. And in fact, you know, even calling this one military science fiction, technically,
yeah.
I mean, like the premise is military science fiction, right. But then so kind of moving into overall thoughts about this one, kind of starting our non-spoiler discussion. Right. Is this military science fiction, or is it like a Dan Brown Da Vinci Code style thriller, you know, with espionage and secret stuff going on?
I'm
going
to go with still kind of military science fiction because he's working in the Soldier Boys and the idea of, you know, having the mechs remote controlled by these guys in a command center way far away. And they do kind of talk about how far you can't go too far because then the latency of light speed kicks in and your response threshold drops so much it becomes unfeasible. You know, stuff like that. And it goes along well with other books like Starship Troopers or Old Man's, not so much Old Man's, I go to Starship Troopers, where they're, you know, sufficiently advanced over the people that they're fighting.
Yeah.
And that, I think, gives you, and that's his analogy or his parallel to Vietnam, right? He writes his book as a critique of the Vietnam War, which is analogous to Afghanistan, Iraq, in our era, I guess.
Yeah, I wasn't really thinking of this one in the context of Vietnam, the Forever War, definitely.
Yeah.
But this one, where you have the technologically superior group.
Sufficiently advanced to just kick the crap out of these people.
Right.
In any battle they have, right?
Yeah.
There's no chance. There's like a 99% chance, or 1% chance, the flip side.
Yeah.
1% chance, maybe somebody might take down one Soldier Boy in the squad of Soldier Boys.
Right.
And you're going to die once you reveal yourself to the Soldier Boy.
Yeah. Otherwise, you have to find out where the what do they call it? Mechanics are housed, right? And attack that, which does happen.
Yeah.
And that's light spoilers, I'm sure.
Right.
We'll stay spoiler light, but I'm kind of I haven't quite decided what I think of this book yet. I'm listening to the audiobook to kind of give it a second chance to go in and figure out, is this just really scattered or is it just like he puts butts in the seats with the military science fiction
premise of it.
And then goes into the more
philosophical stuff. I think he uses it as and that part I kind of like because he uses it as a way to critique, you know, the morality of war for one thing.
Yeah.
And like, is it really necessary? And then, you know, I don't know. I'm trying to think what are the words here.
I mean, it's got to be more complex than war bad, right? Because we get that. Most people get that.
But then he starts asking the questions of like, why are we here? Why are we doing what we're doing?
Right.
And that's how he folds in the other plot lines.
Right.
Right. Which kind of, in my opinion, at first I was annoyed by it. Like, this is going real slow, blah, blah, blah. But then it kind of turned into something more nuanced.
Interesting questions get brought up.
He's asking and answering, or at least trying to answer interesting questions with this group of Seven. And then it gets further into the nuances of jacking and
jacked. Yes.
And like how they share their thoughts and feelings because as they're jacked together, they're completely open.
Right. Right. I'm trying to think if there's much more to talk about in non-spoilers because I just want to start getting to some of those things. I usually do talk about like comps to it, like anything that you can compare to this book.
Besides MechWarrior?
No, MechWarrior totally counts. I mean, right, there's The Matrix, right? The jacking in thing. Avatar, kind of.
The jacking thing, they kind of remind me of The Matrix. So except for in The Matrix, you're like more or less unaware of what's going on outside of, in the real world once you're jacked in, right?
Yeah.
And them too, sort of like that.
Yeah, they're kind of aware of both.
But I feel like they're aware of both what they're seeing through the Soldier Boy or what they're experiencing through the Soldier Boy, put it that way, and what's really going on in their immediate vicinity.
Yeah. The other thing I thought of was, have you ever read Timothy Zahn's Conquerors series?
No.
In that series, there's pilots that can jack into their aircraft along with their co-pilot. And so kind of like a Pacific Rim too, right? Drifting.
Oh, I was thinking of Guardians of the Galaxy 2. when he had that whole civilization that was using in their remote control drones, right. Yeah, like the golden people.
Yes, yeah, exactly. But yeah, the Conqueror series is interesting, mm-hmm. And that's just one tiny little aspect of it. I have them somewhere downstairs. I can lend them to you. Military science fiction, you'd like it.
Yeah, that's cool. Which isn't too different than drones nowadays,
right? Yeah, and that's the other thing that it seems like it's applicable to is drone warfare.
Basically, playing a video game.
The other thing that it reminded me of is the Diamond Age, which is another one of the Hugo winners, where it's kind of post scarcity because of nanotechnology.
Right.
In that one, they have they call it the matter compiler. Right. It just you just put it next to a river and it harvests everything it needs. That's of course, rad. It's even like it's more almost alchemy because I don't think you have to do stuff like feed gold or rare earth metals into it or that kind of thing. Where the Nanoforge here is a little less like a replicator because you still have to give it the
correct materials. You still have to give it the base elements of whatever you're trying to make. So you can't make a gold necklace out of lead.
right. And I'm not 100% sure that in the Diamond Age that you can, but it's called the Diamond Age because diamond is cheap, right? And it is here too, right?
Right.
If you feed in, you feed in enough carbon, you can end up with a big diamond that's a paperweight because it's not precious anymore. Yeah, so let's go ahead and go into spoilers and we can talk about, whatever.
Perfect.
Yeah.
So we can dive into post-scarcity.
One thing in the book I have to say that reminded me of you is at some point, there's the relationship between him and Amelia, or Blaze, they call her, which is an awesome name. And they never explain why she had that nickname. I want to know. I want to know her backstory. Where he's kind of like maybe he's in his 30s. Maybe 20s, black dude.
Yeah, 20s, late 20s.
Yeah. And then she's an older white lady. And so
in her late 40s, I think, or something?
Yeah, I think so. And they're both teachers. She's like a professor of particle physics, and he's a physicist of some kind.
Yep.
And at some point, he's bored, and he's looking for a gift or something for her, and she knows she likes books, and so he picks up the Red Badge of Courage and starts reading it, and it says 2 hours, 2 beers, and I was done with the book, and I thought, that is James.
Thanks.
Yeah, because on Take Me to Reader, we often ask James how much booze it took him to get through a particular book.
What was I drinking yesterday, or it's Saturday when I finished this up? Irish Mules.
What's an Irish mule?
Oh, Irish whiskey and ginger beer.
Okay.
With a twist. It was good. Okay. Yeah, it was yummy.
Did you put it in the copper mug, though?
I did.
Okay. All right.
Yep. And 3 of them.
All right. Good stuff.
So there you go. It's a 3 Irish mule book.
Yeah. Yeah, so one thing to talk about here is the propaganda side.
Right.
Applies to all the military stuff and on the civilian side too, right? Where it talks about at some point, after some, not Mandela, Julian, his Julian Class is the main character. And he is part of a harassment and interdiction team, not a hunter-killer team, right? So they're not meant to go around killing people. They're just, they knock down buildings and do other stuff. And it says at some point,
they go in and clean up.
There were no civilian casualties, of course. Once they're dead, they're rebels. that's a really biting critique of the way,
And then they take all the feed. So everything they're doing is recorded.
Right.
And then the government cleans up the feed and then sends it out to the civilian population.
Yeah.
Body cams. What do they call them? War boys or something like that?
Yeah.
Like these crowds just eat it up like reality television.
Well, yeah, because they get to jack in and experience it.
Right.
Yeah. And the whole Jackson Jills thing, I didn't totally get at first. Where he kept saying Jills, and I'm like, what are Jills? And I'm like, oh, okay.
Officer Jack.
Females with a Jack.
Yeah, female with a Jack.
Yeah. And that, the jacking is, it's so hard to say it without feeling like I'm saying something dirty. Because, of course, they use it for sex, too.
Right.
Where it's this
they
more.
Use it to enhance the experience.
Yeah, this more. I mean, it even talks about how, when you're jacked together with your platoon, all the women in the group experience, I know what it's like to get in an ill-timed direction.
Right.
Or how your balls get in the way sometimes, all these anatomical things.
And then the
things.
Dudes are like, I know it is,
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know what periods are like. I know what PMS is like. Yeah.
Yeah.
And at some point he's talking about how, they're like a god with 10 penises and 10 vaginas. and he's kind of musing that, the god I grew up with didn't even have a single vagina. But there's the part where he's at work, he's jacked into his platoon, right? He's kind of the leader.
Right.
And they're doing their job. And that's not really what the plot is about. But then when he's off work, he goes to the bar and stuff and talks to people. And that's where you start getting the more behind the scenes right. stuff. You start hearing about empathy failures, where it's, mm-hmm. it's people who are part of a soldier boy unit, but they can't kill anymore for some reason.
Right.
Or they empathize too much with the enemy. And that's just this little thing that he presents pretty early in the book that later you're like, oh, okay, it's probably because... Yeah, it's because,
Chekhov's gun.
Yeah, yeah, more or less. Yeah, Chekhov's unloaded gun, I suppose.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I do kind of like the way he goes into the different like types of people that are suited to... Not only suited to being jacked, but suited to different squads. Like yeah. you were saying with Julian and his squad or...
Yeah.
I forgot that's what they were, the harassment squad. Mm-hmm. And then you got like the 100 killer squads, which are like pure psychopaths.
Right, right. But if you enjoy stuff like Predator or like right. the recent movie Prey, right? And if, yeah. you, if you like watching all that mayhem, then like you can picture a lot of the stuff with the soldier boys going through, right. you know, making a mess out of howler monkeys. And
Well, you know, there's a difference between watching it and actually doing it.
Right, yeah.
I have no idea like, you know, how many of these people watching it would be able to go in and do it and then mentally survive it.
Yeah.
Psychologically yeah. survive it.
I well, suppose. And at some point he gets the guy Park, I think his name is, who comes over to his group from
right.
a hunter killer group. And even though they're using non-lethal.
He could sense he's crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he's like, he keeps wanting to try and snipe people.
Well, yeah, because like even they're using like trank darts or something. Right. And he's like, all right, I'm going to put it in that guy's eye, right? yeah. And he can tell it's going to happen and he tells him to stand down. And
Yeah.
Yeah. And some bad stuff happens, like the insurgency comes in and makes a mess out of mm-hmm. out of the base, right?
There's which one's that?
Well, they get in there as food service people, right? And they get in and right. and grease all the seconds, the guys who right, aren't in the cage,
right.
And then there's a soldier boy who's kind of just on duty.
Yep.
There, it takes him a couple seconds to realize what's happening and take right. those guys out
okay.
before they can.
I thought you were going to get to. I was thinking of
the
when
children
they were tearing down the school.
Yeah.
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 Or tearing down those old buildings, but then they were full of a bunch of kidnapped school children.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like the Ngumi killing her own child, Ngumi is.
Well, but they weren't. I mean, they
I guess they
it's
weren't.
The no true yeah. Scotsman kind of thing, right? It's
right.
it's wealthy Europeans who are in these poorer areas right, with their right. kids going to private schools.
That's a good
and,
point.
You know, white people moving into their territory. And
still kind of messed up, though.
It's very messed up, right? And it's they're able to more or less blame the Alliance for it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it, just to clear it up, in case anybody listens this far, and they did we say all spoilers yet? Yeah, we did.
I think so. Yeah,
I hope we did.
I'm used to it anyway.
Yeah, they're supposed to come in and knock down some buildings
right.
to put in some housing, and one of the buildings they knock out is full of unconscious tied up children that fall.
Well, they were also
stories.
Using it as kind of a military parade and show of force thing.
Yeah.
So yep. they were parading down one of the cities like early in the morning, and their goal was to take down an old building, decrepit building.
Yeah.
And yeah, for the people, but they were doing it as kind of a favor, but also as a show of force.
Yeah.
Right. And there was like protesters everywhere and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. The entire time, you know, I felt like he did a good, Joel Holman did a good job of building the tension through Julian because he was just sensing the whole time. Oh, yeah. This is going to turn bad. Mm-hmm. There's just the number of people there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it all goes really bad because they discover, you know, that it's raining children yep. all of a sudden and,
right.
and they're all dead.
Yep. And then once the protesters see all that, that goes violent.
Right.
Because there's also terrorists embedded into the protesters.
Right, right. And they have non-lethal right. things to try to tie up the protesters for. But if mm-hmm. you have enough people, if you knock right. down a bunch, then you end up with people trampled.
All their non-lethal stuff backfire.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right. They had that cool, like, glue stuff or whatever. They would spray on the ground and people get stuck so they can yeah. run for you.
Yep, and all that.
But then everybody behind them was not stuck, and
yeah.
the stuff had already dried,
mm-hmm.
and they just trampled everybody in yeah. front of them.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and then Julian is trying to shoot a disabling shot at a kid
right.
with a laser rifle or something.
He gets knocked out.
He gets knocked out. It reminded me of Soylent Green, right? Make Room, Make
yep.
Room, where he's
right.
trying to shoot him in the leg,
yeah.
and he stumbles and falls into a kill shot.
Yeah.
Which really screws Crap. Him up, and he's already been on the edge of offing himself anyway.
Right.
And so I will say, you know, in terms of trigger warning, right? There's mm-hmm. a lot of suicidal ideation stuff in here, suicide attempt. So if that's something you're sensitive to, you might want to steer clear of this one.
Right.
Yeah, because you know everybody else in his group, like he hides it well, but mm-hmm. like one person is like, you hide it pretty well, but I do know I that thought's in there. Yeah.
And was the more empathic one that said that too, I think.
Yeah.
It's Candy.
Yeah. Candy.
Yeah. So I guess another thing, each of these squads has kind of like a more empathic person who like mm-hmm. acts as a calming effect for the whole squad. Mm-hmm. That kind of settles them all down so they don't go nuts.
Yeah. Suppose. Well, they talk about all the, you know, how when you're jacked in with people, mm-hmm. you really can't hide things. And so like if you're, right. if two of you are having adventures right. on the side, everybody knows about it. And everybody knows what each of you thought about it. Right. So yeah.
That's the part that would be weird for me. I'm like, gosh, I don't think I can handle this openness. Bah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fine disappointing one person, but not 10.
Right.
And, you know, the other thing that's mentioned here is in order to get a jack installed, there's like a 10% mortality rate. Mm-hmm. So,
which is
so
kind of nuts.
Yeah. Especially when, you know, like.
Well, no, it's actually, well, it's different than that, right?
It's less than 10% mortality, but yeah. there's a certain percentage that go crazy.
Right.
Or that can't take.
Because I think he mentions that one point, because they reiterate these statistics multiple times throughout the book. Mm-hmm. And in the beginning, it's like kind of like. I think it wasn't actually that bad. It was like mortality of like 70 or 80% or something. Mm-hmm. But that's just if you die or don't die. They don't talk about the other, you know, of the people that survived, the umpteen percentage that are crazy, the umpteen percentage that are disabled somehow.
Yeah.
They survive it, but they're not better off for it.
Yeah. And not everybody volunteered for it, right? This is
exactly. Yeah.
That's the part where I'm like, well, what? Where's the human rights here?
Right.
And that component is still present in the rest of the novel. But you find out too that like the army is pretty much okay with the 10%, you know, or the 7 or 8%, right? And it could be improved if they just, you know, used better practitioners or studied the problem more and had it done by robots.
More research, had better practitioners.
They're just eating it.
You know, took their time, but they don't care.
Not valuing people enough to care about that.
Exactly. Which is kind of military in general. I think that's another, you know, another critique for the Vietnam War in this case, mm-hmm. Afghan or Iraq here in our case is, you know, they're just doing stuff like, the human cost it's worth it.
Right.
Where is it really?
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, they're just soldiers.
Right. Even though, you know, they talk about how they don't want to be a shoe, right? Mm-hmm. A shoe is just like a foot soldier.
Right.
Who doesn't have the jack, but they're not really sent out there to do the super dangerous stuff.
Yeah.
But when they are, they're cannon fodder.
Right.
So.
But they also get all the menial jobs, which I think Julian was saying, I wouldn't want to be a guard. It's just bored out of my mind.
Yeah.
I emphasize that. I've been there. You are bored out of your mind.
Yeah.
So let's talk about this non-scarcity thing.
Post-scarcity thing. Because in theory, it's post-scarcity, right?
Right. So you have these nanoforges where you can pretty much create anything you want. Actually, can you create almost anything you want? One thing I did wonder was with in the St. Bartholomew's, mm-hmm. the 20, mm-hmm. and they're like drinking wine.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, did the nanoforge make the wine or did they make all the stuff so you can make wine?
I don't think the nanoforge made wine.
Probably gave them like the grapes and the vats and they went off and fermented to make wine or something.
Yeah. Does this book talk about the nanoforges being used for food? I don't think it really does. In the Diamond Age, you definitely do have that where you can go to a public matter compiler and get mm-hmm. noodles.
It didn't explicitly, but I was under the impression that, okay, that's a good point. It didn't explicitly.
Yeah.
But they did more or less linked the nanoforge to being extremely wealthy. So they were extremely well off. They had really good food, really good wine.
Yeah.
Everything they needed. They had the, you know, not jungle, the forest inside, like all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And all of that was enabled by the nanoforge.
Right.
That part was pretty explicit.
Yeah.
What wasn't explicit was necessarily how. Like, did they nanoforge replicate a tree?
No. I'm pretty sure, actually, say that they can make stuff with the nanoforge and sell it.
Oh, okay.
And so then that's how they...
Got it.
Can make a living, right? Right. All beasts are equal to all beasts, but some are more equal than others, right? The very animal farm thing with the nanoforges is technically these should be able to be made available everywhere.
Everywhere.
But they're not made available everywhere.
No.
Because there's an elite. And even it talks about the universal welfare state, right? Mm-hmm. In the United States or in the alliance. It doesn't say the U.S.
I thought it did say the United States.
It might have. Yeah. But in the Alliance countries, anyway.
Yeah, Alliance countries, either way.
Yeah. Where, yeah, everybody's guaranteed essentially a comfortable life, and they don't have to work or anything.
Right.
But if you want luxuries, you still need cash.
Right.
Or credits.
Right.
And so that just reminds me of, you know, the worst excesses of Soviet Russia, right, where everyone was equal, but some were more equal than others.
More equal than others, yeah. Right. Yeah, I was very, very down on the idea of universal welfare, whatever that means.
It was, right, because when they're – and this is the big spoiler is they realize that these – the seven up in North Dakota.
The 20 in North Dakota.
Oh, I thought it was the seven at first.
No, the seven are the Julian and his friend group there.
Oh, okay.
And then the 20 are the
Yeah, they're supposedly in a mental asylum.
Right.
Because they went crazy for some reason.
Right.
That's the
cover.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. But in fact, it cured them of being warlike at all. It humanized them, right? And this is what they call it, the humanization process.
Humanization, yeah.
And so now there's and we haven't even mentioned the Jupiter thing yet.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's the thing. There's so many ideas in this book that I feel like, did we need all of those?
Well, kind of, because the Jupiter...
It's the ticking clock.
Right? Yeah, the Jupiter... Exactly. I was going to say, yeah. The Jupiter thing is what puts the humanization up against a wall, I suppose. Yeah. It gives it a timeline. There you go.
Right? Yeah.
Challenges it for a timeline.
Mm-hmm. So you have the humanization thing where once you've been jacked with a group for... They say 2 weeks.
It was two weeks. Yeah, 2 weeks of continuous jacking.
Yeah. You will want to hydrate. Damn. That reminds me of Letterkenny. Oh boy. Somebody tell me if you got that reference. It cures you of being warlike, right? It makes you so empathetic that you could never hurt another person except in self-defense. Right. And even then it would be difficult.
Right.
Which is a real problem for the way a military operates.
Yep.
Right?
Sure is.
And so the way to end wars is to give everybody this procedure. Unfortunately, the installing the jack is dangerous.
As a mortality rate. Right?
They have this plan to disseminate this out to everybody and to take over the military first, right? Mm-hmm. And then the government. In this peaceful coup, right? Bloodless coup, in theory. But, you know, they're talking about it and they're like, okay, if it's 10% mortality, you're talking about 600 million people.
It's not nothing.
Yeah, that's real bad. And I think that's the reason for the Jupiter thing, right? Because I couldn't justify it, you know, based on...
It's bodily forcing, giving you a hard choice, right?
Yeah, a real hard choice.
Rock and a hard place.
Yeah.
Either 600 million people... Or everybody.
Everyone, yeah.
Well, not even everybody, just the entire universe.
Yes, right? yeah. It turns out maybe not the entire universe, but but at least
our pocket of it anyway.
Our pocket of it. Yeah. But yeah, the whole bodily autonomy piece of it, I'm like, you're going to force people to get the jack installed? I have a real hard time with that.
Right.
It's the greater good.
That's a little problematic.
Yeah. So I'm not sure I can really get behind that, but it's up against this ticking clock because there's a big CERN style super collider being put like around Jupiter or something.
Yeah.
And, and the idea is that once it comes online and starts going, it's going to create something that's going to consume the entire universe.
It's going to recreate the Big Bang.
Yeah. Right. The diaspora, right?
Yeah. That was their, I believe their goal was to better study the Big Bang. And then in doing it, they're actually recreating it.
Yeah.
Then wiped out the solar system.
Yeah. I think Joe Haldeman has some background in physics. And so I don't want to go, are we sure that works? But on the other hand, you know, like people thought when the Large Hadron Collider was going to go online that it was going to create a black hole, right? because it is possible to create little micro black holes, right?
Right.
But general people don't know that black holes evaporate, right? That they're not permanent, right?
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. And so that's a small enough black hole is not going to threaten Earth.
It's just
going
to go poop.
It's going to do some consuming, and it's going to
exist and not exist.
Yeah, and so it's not as worrisome as it sounds. But when you say it could create black holes, everybody goes whoa, you know, it looks like the Star Trek 2009, you know, consuming Vulcan kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, okay, so it's good you used the word that is more then because that's what they're recreating,
right?
Which is not just poof.
Right, there's still matter. It's just less organized.
Yeah.
Right. So it gives. It's like a Project Genesis from Star Trek II.
Right.
On a universal scale.
Yep.
Right. And Bones would not be happy about it.
Yeah. I did like how he went into the particle physics side of the Big Bang theory. I guess.
Yeah.
With all the different the different stages where, like, you know, all the matter in the universe. And this always blows my mind too, especially when Neil deGrasse Tyson talks about it.
Right.
It's like all the matter in the universe stuck in this, like, not even pea-sized, smaller than a pea-sized thing. It's like, it just, like, blows your mind to think about this.
Yeah, stuff. Yeah.
It's so cool.
Yeah, and you look at it, like, are we sure about that? I mean, how can we really be sure about that? But
it just seems so mind-blowing. It's like, oh, man, it's awesome.
Yep. Yeah, but it invites crazy religious people to object to it, right?
Right.
But not in this case. They don't object to it. They're like, sweet, that sounds really good.
Let's do it. Oh, yeah, the Enders.
That's Enders. That's the other thing.
So these are the flip side to the humanizers, humanized, I guess.
Right. Yeah, these are radicalized.
Right.
Probably Christian. I'm not sure if it says Christian at any point.
Yeah, it's a good point. They don't actually say Christian, but they sure do seem like it.
It's got to be. I mean, apocalyptic Christianity
is kind of a very apocalyptic sect of sect.
But, I mean, you know, as a Christian person myself, I'm like, I mean, like assassins. This is where the Dan Brown thing came in. Like a Da Vinci Code character going around killing people in the name of God. Yeah. Not that there hasn't been a lot of killing in the name of God. Don't at me. I get it. I understand.
Ironically so, yes.
Yeah.
Although these assassins were badass, though.
Oh, yeah.
They were cool to read. These guys, they suck because of who they are and what they're doing, but damn, they're badass.
They killed some people in very interesting ways. If you're into that. That stuff reminded me a little.
I always think about the killing part. I was thinking about the one dude they have, the dude assassin that they actually capture, and they like...
They think they've got him under control.
Yeah, they think I'm under control, and they let him, like, they give him, like, one hand free or whatever, and he does some crazy gymnastic crap and, like, levels them all right before he's about to run out the door and get knocked out again real quick. Yeah. But still, I'm like, dang, dude.
And then
the way he, I was not a fan of reading about his past debaucheries.
Rape and mutilation.
My God, that was bad.
We don't need to read about that.
Yeesh.
and then, of course, they have to jack with him. And so, like, they experience his view of that, too. And of course, it fails on him. The process fails on him.
Yeah.
He just goes,
like, catatonic or something.
Right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you know, at some point, we skipped over. I mean, we're not going through a straightforward walkthrough of this one. But Amelia tries to get the jack so that she can connect more with Julian, right?
Right.
And it doesn't work.
Yeah, because she gets jealous of all the jacking.
Yeah. And it doesn't take.
Nope.
Turns out it's okay because
it really does seem like something like that would not be reversible.
Yeah.
But hey, I don't know.
Like, hey, okay, we took a little cone out of your brain. We'll just slip it back in there and you'll be good.
Right back in.
Yeah,
you're good.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of the same thing with the memory manipulation thing, doesn't turn out to be as reversible as Julian thought.
But yeah, that part also seems like stretch.
Yeah.
I had a hard time buying into some of the memory stuff they were talking about. And the brain,
it's super complicated. It reminded me of Fringe. Yeah. Did you ever see that show?
Yes.
Where they had removed part of Walter's brain. Yeah.
Well, the thing is, though, is that the brain is not that well-defined in all those different places, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we have these regions where we think memory exists.
Yeah.
But it's not like state lines where it's delineated right here. And once you cross this area, you're in a new state of the brain.
Yeah.
It's
you even hear about stroke victims, like the brain tries to rewire itself, you know?
I had a hard time with all that stuff because, like, there's no way you could be that precise. That's bullshit.
Sufficiently advanced.
Although, medicine. Right. Yep. Yeah. Yeah, that's touche. Yeah. All right. I'll go with you, Arthur C. Clarke.
It was, 50 years in the future from the time the book was being written? So
right. That's fair enough.
It's a bit of a leap. On the other hand, you know, some of the applications of it are really cool where they're just like, do you want me to explain it to you? No, let's just jack, you know, or they can plug it into like a phone. Like, so it's like a direct modem connection where they're like, let me explain, you know, stick the thing in. Exactly.
Connected.
Okay. I got that 3-hour lecture in 15 seconds.
Yeah.
Even though then at other times they're like, I understand Japanese while I'm jacked in with somebody who knows Japanese, but then as soon as we're out, we don't.
It fades. Yeah, which is kind of cool. Doesn't completely get downloaded though, I guess.
I guess not. Yeah. Maybe if you stay in long enough.
Then you become humanized.
Yeah. Of course, you know, the whole thing about trying to get people to become humanized, you know, just mm-hmm. totally reminded me of like vaccine mandates and stuff.
Oh yeah.
I'm like, yeah, no, this,
that doesn't work.
This Christian, the hammer of God, I guess that was the, right. the sect that was trying to bring about the end of the world. But, mm-hmm. but even like mainstream Christians would be like, nope, that's the mark of the beast. I'm not taking that.
Yeah.
You can't make me do it. Right. My body, my choice in this case. I think, The groups that you were trying to convert that way would be like, no, the solution to the wars and all that kind of stuff is Jesus. Right. I mean, it's like, you know, the fact is that when you look at the problems that we have with mass shootings and stuff mm-hmm. and be like, I mean, it might be a gun problem. And all the Christian gun-toting people are like, no, it's a heart problem.
I'm right.
It's a gun problem. Yeah. Why would we, you know, use technology to do what we can do with prayer? Right.
Yeah.
Crazy religious nut jobs. Yeah. that actually reminded me of one of the seasons of Dexter when you had the guy,
Colin Hanks trying to
bring about the end of the world.
Right. Killing people, putting all in different positions and
tableaus.
Weird
things. Yeah. Yeah.
The that's right. The tableaus. Mm-hmm. That's what it was. Yeah. Yeah. I'm trying to think. Since we were talking about how the hammer of God, the Jupiter Project kind of gave them some sort of urgency to do the humanization thing and sped up their timeline-ish. Mm-hmm. They didn't really need to do the entire human restart, right? They just needed to get this coup underway so they could stop the
Jupiter Project. So they could send the order to shut down the Jupiter Project thing.
So in theory, they could have stopped after that, I guess. I don't know how that would work. But then they decided to just go Brave New World.
Yeah.
Alpha phase, I suppose.
I'm so glad I'm not a beta.
I'd go for being on an island. No, why not? What the heck?
Yeah, that's the way they end up, right? Is that right. There's some percentage of people who can't mm-hmm. get the jack and or can't be converted. And so, yeah, they end up on the island with the people right. at the end of the Day of the Triffids.
Yep. that's what it was. I think they wanted to do everybody because once you start, you can't really stop because you leave everybody vulnerable to...
Right. You're creating a bunch of sheep.
That's what it was.
And, yeah. and the ones who don't get the procedure are mm-hmm. the wolves, right? Yeah. So it's an interesting read.
Yeah.
I will say it was an easy read. It was a little slow in places, but I never really had a problem.
Like I thought it was a little slow in the beginning, like probably the first third. But then when you started seeing like the direction everything was coming together, how it was congealing and creating one mm-hmm. larger, more just really nuanced plot.
You know, yeah.
Then it kind of all started making sense and smooth and went quicker, I think.
Yeah. Well, and I was glad it didn't go entirely smoothly.
Well, right, yeah.
where they're like, there's an assassin.
Oh yeah,
out
the
there.
Different ups and downs were fun.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the assassin, we caught her. We're good. You know, like he doesn't kill her at some point,
right?
And then he regrets that. You know, his kind of personal story, his arc, Julian's arc, is interesting because mm-hmm. you know he goes from he really doesn't like being a soldier boy. He's ready to cash it all and kill himself.
Yeah, right.
And then he has this thing that happened where he inadvertently kills someone mm-hmm. and does a suicide attempt.
Does try and kill
and, him. And then, you know, at the end of the book, he's just like, yeah.
Yeah, he kind of turns into, I'd rather kill that person than myself.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's not a real happy place for him to end
up. Everybody's like, are you okay? I remember because after he did kill the female assassin.
Yeah.
Quite brutally.
Quite brutally, yeah.
And then his buddy's like, are you sure you're okay?
Yeah.
He's like, oh yeah, I'd rather go kill these guys than myself right now. So we're good.
Well, but you get the introspection too, where he's like,
right.
he knew on some intuitive level what move she was going to make. And
yeah, that
and,
was actually
and enjoyed
neat.
It.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, he gets left alone with the with the general guy because I thought they were screwed at some point. The general guy has the soldier
right.
boys with him, and then exactly. all of a sudden you realize, oh nope, the soldier
they
boys have been
him.
Co-opted.
Yeah, that was right.
And he's like, okay, grease this guy, and the soldier boys guy like, no, I can't do that. And he's like, no, seriously, it's you're killing him, so he can't kill the entire world. It's self defense. No, I can't do it. And like, all right, leave the room.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's almost as if as long as he has like a mission or a goal and can stay focused, mm-hmm. then the suicidal ideation kind of backs off. It's there, but it's back there, and mm-hmm. he's not inclined to follow through with it.
Yeah, I don't have any background to know what that if that's a thing or not.
I don't know. just kind of my what I'm intuiting from reading this book.
Yeah, yeah.
Which kind of, now that you put it that way, I wonder if Joe Haldeman has a background with that, or
maybe not
direct experience, or maybe not experience because of himself, but maybe experience, with soldiers he was with in Vietnam.
Yeah, yeah. I wouldn't be surprised,
because there's definitely suicide watches in the military.
Really?
Yeah.
Is this something you know about?
Yep.
Well, I mean,
there's people that crack, and you got to keep an eye on them until they're in a safe spot, and then get them home.
Is that a unique, I mean, like, you were on a sub, right? You can see how somebody could crack up from being confined underwater for months at a time.
Right.
Is that a uniquely Navy thing, or is that just
uniquely military thing? It depends on the situation. I mean, in the submarine, if you're claustrophobic, you're screwed. Yeah. We did have a guy crack on that account.
Okay.
And, he had to be kind of just subdued, I suppose.
Oh, wild.
Yeah, until we got in the port and got him off the boat.
Anything else to talk about this one?
There was, there's something I was thinking about with the nanoforges and the artificial scarcity. Because I feel like Haldeman did present it, I suppose, bring up the theme of, I guess what I wrote down is government inventing war to create artificial scarcity and profit.
Yeah.
But he didn't really follow up on it at any point, I don't think.
No, not totally.
I mean, they did go into reasons, why they're at the war and the Agumi had the nuclear bomb and blah, blah, blah. Well, but yeah, I guess he didn't really follow much on that theme, even though it was there.
And the other thing that I had meant to bring up was the whole thing with the children, where they had, you can produce, they call it strings, right? Where people can jack in and see what you were thinking and feeling at the time. So they could do that from every one of those soldier boys and realize they were all horrified.
Right.
And didn't have anything to do with it. But that's not good enough for the believers, right?
Cities.
And that, I mean, I wish that wasn't true. we unfortunately live in a society where fake news is thought to be a thing. Yeah, I mean, I guess even I believe in fake news.
Sound bites from time to time, yeah.
Yeah, where you can have incontrovertible proof of things and people will be like, nope, that's a conspiracy.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly.
Because it goes against what I believe.
Mm-hmm. As well, I cracked up. People say, believe in science. I'm like,
yeah.
Science isn't a belief.
Yeah, I mean, you can trust in the mechanism of science, right, to be self-correcting. Because we'll get stuff wrong and things get refined.
Right.
Occasionally things get overturned.
People aren't really okay with that. They want the answer right now and it has to be correct.
Right.
Or you're false and should die or something.
Yeah. Well, just like we were talking about on the Soylent Green cast, there were some prognostications about global cooling at some point in the 70s.
Right.
And, that turned out to be wrong.
Right.
And so, therefore, some people look at climate science and go, well, it's all BS.
It's crap. Yeah. And garbage. Yeah.
Like, no, we're just refining the models,
Exactly.
And getting...
Oh, yeah. Science takes time and, some people... Yeah. They just don't have patience for it.
Yeah.
Okay. So, since we're wrapping up here, last question.
Mm-hmm.
Would you get jacked?
I mean, if it was Matrix style stuff where I could download knowledge,
right?
It would be really tempting. true. If I knew it was like 7% mortality kind of thing, if with the new process, right? They had like 98% success.
I'll go with the new process.
New process.
New process. Would you get jacked?
Yeah, I'd have to think about it. Because I know I'd have relatives who'd be like, that's the mark of the beast. That's the mark of the beast.
Which is precisely why I live.
Right. I want you to give up on me. I have taken the mark. I can no longer be saved.
I would totally get jacked just for the new experiences.
I mean, it would be, the altered reality. And of course,
Emily would have to get jacked too.
So. Right, right. Altered reality stuff would be interesting.
Where
you can be just like, there's the... One point where like he goes into the Jack House or whatever it was. I can't remember what it's called.
And they're like going to the beach and stuff like that.
Where like he's in their fish or something.
Right.
doing it like they do on the Discovery Channel.
They're like fish and entwining each other. Like,
yep.
And then they turn into eels, then they turn into whales, and they're like jumping out of the water.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. That'd be wild.
I wouldn't be first in line.
I said refined process.
Right.
The refined process.
I mean, as long as you didn't have to get a jack booster and then a jack sack. No, I'm just joking. I can speak like an anti-vaxxer. I'm boosted, just for the record.
All the jacks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That, I did like to, now that we're asking, I guess not to talk more, but the the progression of the Jack itself, where once they actually like put thought into it and, you know, weren't just interested in doing the Jacks to get soldier boys or soldiers and sailors and, you know, airmen, they actually were able to put more research into it and refine the process, take their time.
Right.
And bam, they're now 98% successful instead of 80 or 90.
Well, and then the other thing where they realize, oh, if you put an empathetic person in there, in the group, it takes 2 days, not 2 weeks.
Exactly. Right? Yeah. I like how the science here evolved along with that.
Yeah, exactly.
Book, and that was cool.
Yeah. The methods. Yeah. Get better. I mean, that's kind of consistent with the Forever War, where, you know, you're constantly going out there in your ship and you hope that you arrived someplace with lesser technology.
Right.
You don't really have any social media presence to speak of, right?
Take me to your reader.
Yeah.
That's about it.
Yeah. If you want to reach James, reach out to me and I'll bug him. He lives close by.
I have a Facebook profile, but I'm only ever on there when I'm traveling. It's come to, Emily and I have come to realize we really only use Facebook whenever we're traveling because we create albums so people can share them with people. Because it's the easiest way to do that.
Yeah. Well, thanks for coming over and jacking with me.
Oh, thank you.
It
was a blast.
There's no way to say it that doesn't sound dirty. So, final thoughts. I mean, did you say you liked the book?
Yeah.
Okay.
I just, I would recommend it. Don't worry about reading Forever War beforehand.
Yeah, agreed.
That would be my recommendation. If you're worried about reading Forever Peace before Forever War, don't. You're good.
Yeah. Your experience of this book will probably be worse if you're thinking of it as a sequel to the Forever War.
Yeah, part of me wishes I hadn't actually reread Forever War beforehand.
Yeah.
Because I think I wouldn't have expected some of the things in the beginning, and maybe it would have... The beginning might not have been as slow as it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't go back and reread the Forever War.
Because I've done that a few times, especially with Take Me to Your Reader, where if I watch it before I read it, there's things I'm expecting now because my brain is tainted by the adaptation.
Yeah.
My brain just like, I get anxious about, okay, when's this going to happen? But it might not ever happen.
Right.
And there's like... And that kind of just ruins the experience of reading it. So I generally like to read before I watch because at least if it's not going to happen watching it, it happens a lot faster. You know, the movie's 2 hours and you're done.
Well, that definitely happened with Soylent Green where the assumptions Colin was making about the book. And you're like, but that might not be in the book.
Oh, yeah. Even just reading. Yeah. Especially for that because... Just the cultural phenomenon of Soylent Green. Everybody knows what Soylent Green is, whether or not you've read it or watched it.
Yeah. We're reconvening here after hours with James Beck at his house without the good microphone in front of him. So, hi, James.
Hello.
Because there was something that I forgot to bring up that I wanted to bring up that I had noticed in the writing of the book. I'd written a note down. I just missed it in my notes earlier. And that's the fact that the chapters, you can't even really call them chapters. It's just like... You know, paragraph breaks, section breaks,
or like scene breaks.
It would go from being first person from Julian's perspective to being more third person omniscient in the next one, and it just, you know, just alternated. What did you make of that?
Well, first of all, that was weird and confusing at times.
Yeah,
but in general, I think it was. It seemed just for like scene setting. Or like world setting, because it usually only happened at the beginning of the transitions, and it'd be like, Julian was here with Emilio.
Yeah, but it stayed consistent through the whole scene. If it was first person, it stayed in first person until the end of that scene, and then it would flip back. And sometimes it would be like the omniscient narrator saying they didn't realize that they were in a world of hurt now.
Right.
So I didn't know if it's supposed to be like... In the first person ones were jacked into Julian. And I thought it was going to, there was going to be some explanation as to that.
Right.
But there really is not.
No, so, I just saw them mostly as transitions and that's how I thought about them.
Okay.
And at the end, you know, it like provided us exactly like you said, it provided us kind of the omniscient view of stuff where,
Okay. Like a bigger picture. Well, I'm going to throw that one then to the listeners and say, if you know why, or if you got more out of what read something into that, I'd be interested to hear your theories or your facts.
Yeah, I'd be curious. So,
yeah.
Or facts.
So, yeah. Cool. Okay.
Okay.
Cool. All right. Well, thanks for doing this, James. Appreciate it. This one swept the awards, right? It won the Nebula, Locus, and John W. Campbell, and
all of that,
and Hugo, and that's why I kind of look at it and I'm like, you know.
Oh, that's funny. It won the John W. Campbell Award.
Mm-hmm.
Well, did you read the preface? Where didn't he try and go through Campbell to get this published or something? And
oh, right.
And he's like, no, we don't put women in war or something like that.
Like, oh, that sounds kind of like John W.
Campbell. Yeah.
There's a reason they renamed that award.
So, yeah. Yeah. That's funny. Huh. So, that's funny you mentioned that one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, where it's happened a couple times where one that swept the awards, I've been like, you know. Right. Like Rendezvous with Rama, you know, it swept the awards. And, oh, yeah. And I look at that and I'm like, it's interesting, but not my thing. So, anywho.
All right.
Yep. Bye.
Ciao.
Well, everybody, I hope you enjoyed that discussion with James. If you want to hear more from him, he's not really on social media, but he is on my other podcast, Take Me to Your Reader. That podcast is a lot of fun. I know it doesn't get as many listeners as Hugo's there, but you know, we enjoy doing it. And I think if you enjoy this podcast, you'll probably find something over there that you'd be interested in listening to. I will put a link in the show notes to the page that I set up that has everything we've ever covered on Take Me to Your Reader. We have 118 episodes, I think, on there. So surely you'll find something of interest in those many, many titles. As always, if you want to support the podcast, you can help out by sharing on social media the episodes, leave reviews. That'd be great. I always like to see 5-star reviews. But, you know, leave the reviews that your heart tells you to leave, even if it's 1-star like a recent one that I got. Whatever. And if you want to support the podcast financially, you can go to patreon.com/Hugo's Podcast and sign up to support there. And I think that'll about do it for this episode. So thank you so much for listening, and I will talk to you next time. Bye. The theme music for the Hugo's There podcast was composed and performed by Tim Cuskey.